Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communication, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers, and you're welcome to call in to ask questions and make comments during the show. You can ring toll-free only if you are in the U.S. right now, 877-876-5227. Again, 877-876-5227. Or from anywhere else in the world, you are welcome to ring 530-876-3222. Again, that is 530-876-3222. I also would like to let you know that I am a professional psychic and medium, as well as a Reiki practitioner, and you're welcome to contact me and also find out about other goodies on my website, towardthelight.org. This week, I am very pleased to bring on a guest who actually was the tremendous catalyst for the fact that I am a radio show host on BBS Radio. This man is a brilliant physicist, and he's also written a book called Synchronized Universe. I'm sure he's no stranger to anyone. Please welcome Claude Swanson. How are you, Claude?
Hi, Julia. Great to talk to you.
It's great to talk to you, too. And I've really been enjoying reading your chapter on out-of-body experiences, although your book covers all of these topics that are of paramount importance to me, of course. And anyone who is interested in just reading that chapter can go to my website. But let's also push Synchronized Universe, and that website is synchronizeduniverse.com. Is that correct, Claude?
Yes, www.synchronizeduniverse.com, and synchronized is spelled with a Z, which is the American spelling, so just to make sure for people who might have a question.
Okay, and in British terms, that's a Z, synchronized
exactly.
With a Z.
Right.
Okay, great. Well, that's wonderful, and I guess what really I would like to do is to start talking about what got you into this, Claude, in the first place? What got you interested in the paranormal and proving it and validating it from a scientific point of view?
Sure. You know, looking back, it all makes sense, but at the time when you're on the path, you never quite know what the next step is going to be or where it's going to lead. It really started out for me as a young boy growing up in Virginia, and just you're very close to nature. The skies are very clear at night, and you see all the stars, and they always seem very close. And I remember playing this little game: if you go out at night in the summer and spin around, the stars above you appear to spin, and you feel this force as your arms are pulled up from your side. And when I got older, we learned that's called centrifugal force. It's a basic law of physics, but I always was curious that it's only when the stars are spinning around in your frame of reference that you feel this force. It turns out that this is something that impressed other people through history. Sir Isaac Newton was puzzled by this phenomenon because it's like there's a special frame of motion where you don't feel that force, the centrifugal force. And that's the frame where the stars appear to be stationary. And it turns out that when I went to college, I went to MIT, I was very curious about the universe. I wanted to do a science education to learn all I could. And I learned about this principle called Mach's principle that Ernst Mach, who was a philosopher and a scientist back in the 1890s, helped. He really thought of this, proposed the idea that is the distant matter of the universe that sort of forms a special frame, and that defines what frame we think of as being sort of a non-spinning frame. We don't feel this force. And that got me thinking that the distant stars are somehow connected to things that we experience here locally on Earth, that the universe is connected. In my education, I went to grad school with Brett Princeton, and I pursued trying to learn the best that our physics has to offer in terms of theories of the universe. But to me, the theories that we learn in school didn't really offer an explanation. It didn't really tie together the distant things with the near things. It seemed superficial. And I kept looking for something deeper. In the mid-1980s, I came across remote viewing. And
that's a topic that really interests me.
Well, you know, as a physicist, it violates everything I was taught in school. But at the same time, I heard about it in such a way that I realized it had to be true. So I thought, well, maybe this is a clue to how things that are far away are connected with things that are nearby. Because in remote viewing, as you know, time and space aren't really important. You can go view a distant target a million miles away as easily as one that's next door. You can go backward and forward in time. So it was a clue that maybe there is something about the universe that connects these things together that our current science is missing. So that's what started me on trying to find out, first of all, everything about the paranormal, everything that is sort of poo-pooed in the modern media and the mainstream culture. And yet, if you look into it, what's the evidence for it? And if there's the evidence supports it, then our science should, you know, be trying to explain it. So that was my path, and ever since then I've been trying to explore every different aspect of the paranormal, out of body, near death experiences, remote viewing, EST, all these different things to see what the evidence is. And my book is really sort of the first installment, so the first report, a progress report, on my own little journey, just saying what is the best evidence for these different kinds of phenomena. And how could our science begin to start to explain these things if we were to modify our current science to begin to account for these things? So that's my journey, really.
Well, I know that when I started reading your book, it just every page I turned made me feel ever so grateful more and more for all the data you've put therein and the validations that you have written in the book. And one thing that was of particular interest to me, well, so many things were, to be honest, but one thing that jumps out at me is the fact that, when you were talking about remote viewing, when you were talking about telepathy, when you were talking about ESP, things that I engage in all the time that have always been a natural part of my life, you were pointing out that these phenomena are not influenced, and they do not weaken through space and time. And I thought, what a powerful pointer that you made there, that distance, or the illusion of space and time, do not affect these things.
Mm-hmm.
And that you provided wonderful... In fact, I was just looking at your chapter on OBEs on my website today with the photographs and all of the illustrations that are included. It's a wonderful, wonderful book, and if I were a professor in the university, I would say that your book is definitely a must read. And today I was talking to a friend who is going to be our guest next week, that's Dennis Purcell, and he's read your book three times already because he so appreciates it, and it's so info-rich that I can understand that someone would indeed need and want to read it more
than
once.
Well, thank you so much, Julia. And incidentally, the University of Arizona did offer a course last semester, I guess the spring semester, and used my book as the textbook for it, and it was this was part of the SAGE program there to talk about the paranormal and to help people to both learn about the evidence for it and also have some experiences about it. So let's hope that that's the beginning of also inroads into academia, because it's high time. You know, we have so much hard scientific evidence now to support EFP and psychokinesis, you know, which is the mind over matter, you know, action at a distance, and all these different effects. We have hard scientific data, and so it's time for our sciences to start teaching this in school, and for physicists to educate themselves, take a look at this stuff, and say, well, how could we modify our current science to begin to account for some of these things?
Well, I really appreciate your saying that, because I would tend to believe, after all the testimonies, all the experiences that countless of us have had, how would there not be evidence, you know, really clear evidence that all of this stuff is real? And the fact that we were sent back in the first place to share these experiences, would you be able to give us an idea of some of the, an example of some of the experiments that have been done for our listeners? I think would be really interesting. And also bear in mind that we are speaking to an international audience, so if you're speaking of a place in America, kind of clarify where that is. And I can say that MIT is the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. That's because in America, I'm from Massachusetts. So if you don't mind sharing with us a little bit about some of the experiments, because those are fascinating,
sure,
that you include in your book.
Just to start with the remote viewing program, because that was one that actually our U.S. government started as a secret program back in the early 70s. And maintained it for about 20 years. And they selected very capable people who were very expert and very, very gifted, so the best of the best, to be the remote viewers for that program. But in the process, they developed a protocol, a procedure, that really can help almost anyone to become psychic. And that's one of the attractions for me, because I was educated so that as a left-brained scientist and don't have much confidence in my psychic ability, so I liked the idea that there was a procedure that would make it easier for me. So I did take three courses at the Farsight Institute in Atlanta, Georgia. Courtney Brown was the teacher, and he was trained by one of these people from that program. And in that type of program, you have a very strict set of steps you go through, and they are designed to keep your left brain, your analytical cognitive brain, very, very busy, so it can't interfere and offer analysis, and that allows your subconscious mind to just bubble up.
You said that it's meant to keep the left brain busy?
Yeah, in other words, the analytical part, the part that tries to make sense out of information, is the part that interferes with psychic ability.
Yes.
It's the part, of course, that our school system spends, you know, all of its time developing. But if you want to become a psychic, you have to do work to turn it off and learn how to meditate and quiet the mind. And there have been experiments which show that your brain waves actually know when you receive a psychic message. And even for untrained people, the brain waves show that you do receive the messages, but that's at the subconscious level. When most of us, our conscious mind is so busy chattering that we never hear the message. So it's the process of trying to quiet all that. In the remote viewing program, they give you tables to fill out, questions to answer, a whole set of steps, and that keeps that conscious mind busy, and that allows the subconscious to bubble up information. And during the course of an hour or two, you know, you start off with a set of numbers that connect to somewhere else, to an envelope inside of which is the target. This is a remote viewing procedure. So consciously, you're totally blind to what it is you're trying to see. But over the course of a session, as these thoughts kind of bubble up in your subconscious mind, you usually find yourself more and more homing in on something. You'll get ideas. Things will pop in almost like word association. You want, you know, spontaneous information to be free to come up. And as it does, you get more and more information. You home in more and more on the target, and things start to come together and make sense. in a session. So even for the average people like me, remote viewing can be a very dramatic demonstration. Just as a real simple example, my very first target down at the far site, again, I had no idea what the real target was, but I ended up drawing sort of a mountain, a couple big mountains in the background, and these two black jets moving from left to right at high speed with smoke coming out the back of them and exhaust. The actual target was the big mountains in the background and a black train moving from left to right at high speed with smoke from a smokestack making
the light
exhaust. You know? So when I saw that, I said, there's something to this. Of course, the Princeton Pear Lab and other scientific groups have spent many, many years, decades, in fact, doing research with fairly average people, thousands and thousands of experiments testing this type of ability, and they see very real effects that statistically cannot be accounted for by chance or coincidence. And right now, the effect is in the odds of like hundreds of billions to one that what they're seeing is real. So a lot of this psychic experimentation is now on a very firm scientific basis. So another type of experiment, very different kind of experiment, is called the Baxter effect. This man named Cleve Baxter, who was a polygraph operator, he had a school in New York and taught people how to operate the polygraph, which is, more popularly known as the lie detector. And he was very respected in his field. He even taught the government how to use this machine effectively. One night, he was in his office in New York City and working late, and he thought his houseplant needed a drink of water. But it occurred to him, I wonder what would happen if I wired up my houseplant to the polygraph machine. So he did so, and then he gave it some water. And as he watched the response of the plant on the polygraph, he thought, this does not look like what I thought it would. It resembles a human polygraph response. He thought he saw waves of emotion. So the next thing he thought, this was an instinctive thought, because polygraph operators are taught to put their clients under stress. So the next thing he thought was, what would happen if I burned its leaf? Well, the moment he formed the thought in his mind, the trace on the polygraph went crazy.
Wow. I think I remember reading about that.
Yeah. So the plant knew what he was thinking and was responding, and at that moment he realized that plants are psychic.
Ooh, indeed. Well, the truth is, I think every living creature is.
Exactly.
We've just been conditioned out of it.
Exactly. And this type of thing has been further investigated for 30 or 40 years in many countries by many scientists. These effects are real. My son even used it as a science fair project in high school, and I got a similar type of response. So we now know that the plants and animals, as well as people, are psychic, and even the cells, the single cells in our bodies, are connected to us by our emotions. So you could take the cells from inside the mouth of a person, put them in a special contraption that measures the voltage on those cells. When that person goes many miles away and experiences a strong emotion, the cells back in the laboratory show the same type of response, the same voltage output. So they're still tied to us emotionally over many miles away. So we're learning more and more about how far-reaching, this life force is, and how the psychic ability, this consciousness, really connects us over very large distances.
That is really interesting that you're saying that, because I've always, and I think this is very much connected too, because my understanding is that every cell in the body and in every living organism contains the wisdom of the universe, of the entire universe within it. And also what I've experienced, of course I'm one who was constantly working to develop my psychic abilities, because that's what I do to help people. But my whole body, I will feel it responding to something, either positively or negatively. It will contract. I will have a physical experience as well as an intuitive one. If, for example, I'm thinking, oh, I should do this, and then my whole body will contract as if to say, oh, no, you better not. And, you know, it's a very simple thing, but I think that if our listeners could just pay attention to some of these very subtle experiences that they have. And in fact, when I'm teaching people about doing mediumship or doing psychic work, that it's really important to relax into it, to just allow yourself to experience and to pay attention to whatever comes to you.
Yeah, I remember I did a little bit of experimentation myself to see how this feels and what I could do. And one of the first things I did was take a course in psychic development, and the teacher asked us to meditate 20 minutes twice a day as part of a quieting process. And even just from that simple process, I noticed, you know, after a week or 10 days, you start to feel like you're getting psychic information, as though your sensitivity, your awareness increases. And after a few weeks, we did a little exercise called psychometry or scrying, where each person brought an object, and we didn't know which object came from which person, and each one was given one object to hold and to just see what comes to mind. And the object I held in my hand, I closed my eyes, and I didn't have much hope, really, that this was going to lead to anything. But I just let my imagination go. And that, to me, it felt like just imagination. But what I described, there was a horse and a white fence and a green field, and there was a house, and I described the structure of the house, and ended up applying, you know, pretty exact to the person whose object I was holding in my hand. So you know, this idea that there is some connection that we have to other people and through objects, and of course now we call this subtle energy. We sort of believe that when a person holds an object like that in their possession for a long time, it becomes charged with something special, which connects them back and allows us to sense that connection. We call that subtle energy, or the Chinese call it qi, or the Hindus call it prana. And that's just sort of part of a whole new science. It's also a very ancient science, of course, that we started to develop, you know, to how we can extend our current science to explain some of these things. But I remember, you know, how little faith I had in myself when I, you know, blurted out this picture that I was, you know, as far as I was concerned, imagining. So, I mean, to me, you know, the psychic information starts out feeling like, you know, imagination, like you're making it up.
And yet I have found that I have a different sensation or a different experience. And what I have shared with people, and you can let me know if this makes sense to you or not, sort of like the computer language, when I am thinking about something, I regard that as output. But if I'm, like, for example, in the middle of something and a thought or a person or an idea suddenly pops into my head, then I think this is input. Something is coming to me and I'm receiving it as opposed to projecting it. And so I make that distinction between my own thoughts and something that is actually being transmitted to me.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that is related to all of this too, when you were talking about the chi or the prana or ki, as is part of the word reiki, it means the same thing, universal life force energy, and ki is that energy or chi or prana or what have you. And as I was working on somebody a few days ago, giving a reiki session, of course I get a lot of psychic input whilst I'm in the process of doing the reiki healing. And I was seeing this lady in a circle with a boy and a girl. So I thought, aha, she's got a brother and a sister. And I asked her about this. And sure enough, I was right. And the interesting thing about this, I think we've become so timid or so uncertain of ourselves that we are afraid to just say whatever comes to mind. Then we start censoring ourselves and editing ourselves and all of that. And I know that so many of the things that I've studied in being a psychic practitioner is to never censor yourself. To whatever comes to you, listen to that, pay attention to that, because it's more likely than not very accurate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and I know your psychic ability is much more advanced than mine. I'm just really an amateur to all this. I just sort of try to have a little bit of the experience so I can, you know, just begin to understand it. But
oh, I'd give yourself more credit than that, Claude. Because I think that something in you has guided you so keenly in being able to do all of this work. And so give yourself a pat on the back, because I think that's something we all need to do, especially when we are endeavoring into something that has hitherto been really foreign or alien to us.
What I've been so fascinated by is that we're at a time now where our scientific technology allows us to test and to begin to measure some of these strange forces and strange effects. So it doesn't have to be speculation. It doesn't have to be just religion anymore. We can actually go into the lab and verify some of these things. You know, the chapter you were mentioning on the out-of-body experience is one really interesting case of that, because whenever we do remote viewing or have an out-of-body experience, it appears as though an energetic part of us actually does leave the body, and it does go somewhere. And if the target of your remote viewing is a specific place or a certain thing, experiments have been done to show that you can measure electric fields, magnetic fields, and other types of disturbances that actually occur at the place where your subtle body or your consciousness is located. So we've been able to prove in a variety of experiments that there is an energetic part of us that actually does move and is actually present outside the body. So this is pretty exciting. It makes it out of the realm of just someone fooling themselves or just convincing themselves of something or thinking or imagination. It shows that there's a real phenomenon here.
Oh, I was reading some of this today, and I just got so excited. I was almost jumping up and down like a kid. You know, I'm really tremendously excited about all of this work that you and others have done. And interestingly, one thing that I was reading in your chapter today is the fact that when somebody does go out of body, and you were talking about how the body is weighed, and then when someone goes out of body, and also when somebody finally crosses over, that the body actually does lose weight up to an ounce.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what is very interesting is that a book I've read of PMH Atwater called We Live Forever, she was also addressing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That when somebody crosses over, the physical body actually weighs up to an ounce, maybe even a little bit more, less than what it originally weighed.
Well, to me, the most important reason we need to understand these things and is because we need to understand what life really is, what consciousness really is. You know, people like you who've had near-death experiences, been on the other side and come back, you know, there's no question in your mind. For many of us, you know, it's more of an academic process, it's a belief, but there's less certainty. But the more one starts to look into the data, the more you start to look into the scientific evidence, the more convincing it becomes that that life continues, consciousness continues, and that existence continues after the death of the body. And I think this is so important because we live in fear. I mean, in our societies and our teachings, I'm sorry, is that noise coming through? It probably is. It's really annoying.
Well, I guess that little puppy has got a lot to say about all of this as well.
To me, there's so much of religion in the past and the old belief systems where people live in fear. They live in fear of death. They live, with so many of the customs that in the past cultures that are based on very limited ideas about what life is and what death is. And when we understand that there is no death, that we continue forever. Our consciousness continues in various forms, but it, there's a continuity to it that it changes how we think about what we want to do in our life, about what's important, what we learn, what actions we take, and it gives everyone more freedom. And I think everyone would take better care of the earth if they realized, hey, you're coming back here, fella. You better take good care of this place,
And, exactly. Good point.
And there would be probably less emphasis on money and chasing after wealth when we understood how transient that is and how it's the good works and the love and the joy that we create in others. That's the stuff that you really get to enjoy. So to me, it changes the whole balance of how people make decisions and how they live when we start to learn more about how the near-death experience and the out-of-body and so the higher dimensional aspects, the auras and these other dimensions, they're part of who we are. We're not just this physical body. That's just one layer of many layers of who we really are. And so to me, learning that changes how people act and how they think.
Well, my whole take on all of this is that the physical body is just a facade and a garment that we don in order to operate on the physical plane. So it's basically a suit, but it's not who we are. It is strictly a garment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a number of us have pointed out when we talk about what occurs at death or death of the physical body. The only thing, and the absolute only thing that is lost is the physical body. But even that is not really lost because it's just energy that is changing form. And I think that was also a point that you pointed out in your book, too, that everything is energy, and energy cannot be destroyed. It just changes.
Right, and absolutely.
Yeah, this is really exciting. And I also got a little bit of happy news to share with you and with our listeners. Dennis was telling me about an internet television, and they do have a near-death experience program or channel, I should say, and that website is newcenturytv.com, newcenturytv.com. And so I thought, I'm going to check out this site. This is very interesting, and I did view one of the programs on the near-death experience channel, and here again was a lovely lady talking about her NDE and iterating the fact that she was enveloped in unconditional love. I mean, straight across the board, everyone is talking about this pure love that envelops us and accepts us exactly as we are, that there's no judgment. And I thought, eventually it's just going to get round to everyone that there is no reason to fear death. And in fact, this woman was talking about how in other cultures, how they actually celebrate when somebody crosses over. And in fact, PMH Atwater was talking about the fact that when she learns that somebody crosses over, she grins and smiles. And to be quite honest, so do I, because I think more power to them. They've gone to a better place. They've graduated.
Well, I have an Irish grandmother, and the old traditional Irish funeral was the white wake, where you celebrate and you dance because they've gone to a better place.
Oh, absolutely. And that's really what they'd want us to do. The grief is really for ourselves, not for them.
Mm-hmm.
And That's why this work is so important, so that we really can let people know that life is indeed eternal. And I love, you know, the material that you have beautifully shared in your book, because now I believe me, Claude, I really have. I talk about you quite a bit.
I tell you, one of the things that I have been so excited about in learning this for myself is, you know, the view of the universe that is painted in the media is a very limited view. The Big Bang, it exploded, you know, and it's dying out, and it's getting cold, and it's so big, and it's very limited, and the speed of light is a limit. And when you start to learn about all these other aspects, you realize the universe is actually a much bigger, a much richer, a much more exciting place than we're taught in school. It's a wonderful, thrilling place with almost unlimited, you know, possibilities to learn and to have adventures. And I think everyone, you know, will feel much more excited about life when they start understanding what the real universe, you know, is like.
And that too is multidimensional, and those of us who have been to the other side have actually been able to experience a lot of these things that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really tremendous. Do you know of other research projects that are going on right now about any of this? Or have you continued to do research yourself?
Well, one of the areas that I've been involved in a little bit is the electronic voice phenomena.
Good.
A lot of interesting work in Colorado with Mark Macy and Jack Stuckey, and I've been doing a little bit of myself. What we find, you know, is that that when people pass over, they're still able to communicate to some extent. And by and large, up to this point, it's been those on the other side, left to their creativity, but they've been able to get messages across on tape recorders and video recorders. I went to a haunted house, a friend of mine who had grown up in this house, and we videotaped a lot of orbs, little orbs that would show up in this house. He was getting lots of orbs on his video camera. We used a Sony Nightshot video camera, so it's totally dark, so it's a near-infrared photography, and I wasn't seeing anything, and I commented to him, and he made the statement to the darkness of the room. He said, "Would an orb please show up for Claude's camera and move slowly so Claude could get a picture of it?" Within about 2 seconds, the orb appeared in the middle of my frame on my video camera and took about 2 seconds to kind of slowly move toward me and to the right. And it was a beautiful shot. So this communication, and when they do this type of thing, they also often leave quick little traces on the tape recorders, which when you slow down the little blip, the little noise, you'll find very clear verbal speech communication. So we're sort of learning now that our technology is a window that allows us to directly communicate with those who have passed over. So this dimensional window is starting to open up for us.
Oh, that is really nice. I'm so pleased that you've had those connections. And I'm actually in the chapter on OBEs that is on my website, you have got a couple of images where there's streaks of light coming out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recall if this is from a different experiment. I believe it is from a different experiment, actually,
mm-hmm.
than the one you've just described.
Yeah.
But you've got some very, very clear details.
I had a circle of friends, all with interest and some talent in the paranormal, who were concerned about Y2K and what might be happening at that time, 1998, 99. So we got together and bought a house. They wanted a house away from Washington, D.C., in the country somewhere. They ended up buying the most haunted farmhouse anyone has ever seen. And it had all kinds of phenomena. So if you go outside this house at night on any random night and start taking flash pictures, you frequently see orbs flying around.
Is this in Virginia?
In West Virginia.
West Virginia.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we saw it in the attic. There's some vortexes that were photographed up there and some other strange orb phenomena. So it was just a little laboratory for the paranormal, this one house was.
Wow. That's great. Well, you know, and I'm going to give you a little bit of an example of some psychic stuff with me. I do remember the Y2K issue, and a lot of people were very nervous and concerned, and I thought, I am just going to trust my higher self, my soul, to guide me on whether or not I need to stock up on a bunch of water and all of that stuff. Well, I got absolutely nothing. You don't need to do anything. Just relax and enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that, and sure enough, nothing happened. I was actually here in Nashville, Tennessee, USA, when we rolled off into the new millennium, and everything was just as normal as it could be around here.
Well, I think your information was better quality than mine was, but we had a lot of fun scaring ourselves.
Well, that's great. And you know, speaking of hauntings, I also like to let people know that because some people say, "Oh my God, I'm scared." They don't even want to visually see a loved one whom they know is on the other side. And I always point out, what? That's just a person. It's just somebody you love. You don't need to be afraid of that person.
Mm-hmm.
They're just operating on a different frequency now,
mm-hmm.
a higher frequency. And in fact, I've shared stories about you know, being in Nashville or Franklin, Tennessee, where they had the Civil War in this country, and actually the front lines of well, at least part of it, was fought in Franklin, Tennessee. And I was also at a former old factory there, which is now a bunch of adorable little shops and places for artisans and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually saw the spirits and entities of people who had crossed over, people who had been factory workers. Furthermore, I was able to positively identify them.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And then a friend took me to a cemetery where soldiers from the Civil War were buried, and I admit my ignorance to the Civil War because, quite frankly, I'm not interested in war.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in eternal life. But I saw a young man standing before me and started describing this lad to the friend that I was with, and my friend started asking me questions. What color is he wearing, and so on and so forth? And I said, well, I see the color gray. And it turns out that that was the color of the people from the South.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I was able to identify him as being from Mississippi, and it turned out that we were sitting right next to the block of graves from Mississippi. And the thing about my visual impairment is I didn't even notice any of that, so I couldn't have been influenced by what my physical eyes saw, because they saw nothing.
Mm-hmm.
All I had to go on was what I was seeing psychically. So, you know, all of this, I'm just being brave and coming out and saying, this is what I see, this is what I experience. And then people like you are coming forward and sharing, you know, from a scientific vantage point, validations of all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you also talked about telepathy, and can you share a little bit about that, what some of the experiments that were performed to sort of validate or measure that?
Sure. One of the really important books that probably sparked a lot of research in America was a book called Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain by Ostrander and Schroeder, Sheila Ostrander and Lynn Schroeder. Came out in 1970. These two ladies had been over in Eastern Europe and Russia, 1968-69. It was a kind of a unique time period when there was a thaw in the Cold War, and scientists who were working on projects were allowed to speak to these two ladies. They were really they their primary interest was in a man named Lozanov, who had learned, developed a technique of sleep learning, a lot of light hypnosis, a certain music in the background, a certain cadence, and it was based on Raja Yoga, which is how the yogis are able to memorize thousands of pages of the ancient Vedas with perfect memory.
And wow.
He was adapting it to teaching language, but he also discovered that when people took this program of learning, they often developed psychic abilities and other paranormal capabilities in the process. So that was their initial attraction to go over and do this research. Once they were in Eastern Europe, they began finding other people who were involved in various aspects of paranormal consciousness research, and it led to uncovering a huge amount of government-sponsored research in these areas. And this was in their book, Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain. It just laid out chapter after chapter really important progress that was going on there that in the West we were pretty ignorant about. And I think it stimulated a lot of work here. I know the Russians, for example, at that time had a couple of individuals who were very talented and were regularly able to telepathically send messages 5,000 miles with pretty high accuracy. Another scientist had developed an ability by sending the message more than once and using error correction, which is what we use in signals, sending signals over noisy phone lines and things like that, able to send psychic messages with 100% accuracy. So that type of work is now almost 40 years old. So that started this whole revolution. The Princeton Pear Lab, Edgar Mitchell, and the Noetic Sciences people, other groups like that, have continued that research in the West. So we've been able to show that you can transmit messages psychically with high accuracy. Mitchell, when he was the sixth man to walk on the moon, and on his way back in the Apollo space capsule, he had a program. He agreed to send a set of random psychic cards to four psychics on the Earth, 200,000 miles away. And when he landed, he scored their readings of what he was sending, and they had sufficient accuracy to defy chance by a large margin. They published a scientific paper about it, but it proved that that ESP can transmit 200,000 miles just as accurately as it can next door. So, again, the psychic abilities, like the other paranormal abilities, that the distance does not weaken the effect.
That's why I also really like to stress the fact that something that happened to me during the 11 September attacks on the World Trade Center, and my daughter was in Manhattan when that happened, and I was here in Nashville. And, of course, all the telephone lines went out and everything else, and I just said, oh, my God, my daughter is there. And I had nothing that could reassure me about anything except telepathically I heard her saying, Mom, I'm okay. Throughout the day, and it was so clear that I could even hear her voice, her own inflection was the voice that was unique to my daughter, Jamil. And then when I finally did hear from her via telephone later that evening, she affirmed to me that that's exactly what she was projecting to me telepathically, verbatim.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't stress how important it is to have this and to make use of it, because there are going to be lots of occasions where people won't have standard means of communications, and we need to trust in our telepathy, because it also, I tell you, for me, it was the difference between totally losing it and being of sound and peaceful mind, knowing that my daughter was quite all right, even though she was traumatized, and who wasn't traumatized that day. But it's really something worth noting that we all have this, and I tell everybody we are all by nature psychic, intuitive, telepathic. We can all go out of body. We can all do remote viewing. We really just need to give ourselves permission to do so. We need to honor and acknowledge that this is true. And bless you, Claude, for coming forward and, you know, in an academic format, being able to validate and share all of this with people, because, and again, I would say it's a must read that people have caught from your book. It is just absolutely tremendous. Are you working on any other projects right now?
Well, funny that you should ask. Yeah. The I'm working on Volume 2, which focuses on this strange stuff called subtle energy, the chi or the prana, which seems to be the special ingredient that makes psychic ability possible. And you know, if you go back and look at many of the unusual abilities of yogis and the magicians of the past, levitation, teleportation, things like that, really strange things that some of these people, we have, you know, pretty good evidence, are able to do, that subtle energy seems to be the common thread. It's the same energy that a Reiki practitioner or an energy healer is using and transmitting into the body of the patient when you're doing healing work. So it's really bound up with the paranormal in many different ways. And I'm writing a book about subtle energy and trying to pull together from different sources the different aspects of it. It has many different facets to it and shows up in different ways. But you know, one of the names for it is the life force. It's really the special energy that makes life possible. It's also the energy that makes consciousness possible. So it has some special properties, and that's what I'm working on right now.
Well, I'm so looking forward to when that comes out. Do you have a date in mind, or are you just working on it right now?
Well, I would love to. I'd love to have it out by the end of the year. I'm not sure if it'll be ready or not. It's one of the things that is both exciting and depressing is how fast this field is growing and advancing, because it has applications in healing. We're seeing lots of validation now. There's a whole research community that's pretty well funded now that alternative medicine and alternative energy are starting to become more accepted in America. And, of course, the Chinese are also doing very serious research about this energy. They have these practitioners called Qigong masters. And
yes.
Again, it's one more form of mastering and manipulating this energy, and they use that for healing as well. So a lot of research now is coming out to prove that it's real, to show various aspects of it, and of course the acupuncture system that permeates our body is what carries this energy through the bodies to the organs. So it's, you know, again, an essential part of life that's not very well understood in Western medicine, but of course, you know, in Chinese medicine, it's been around for thousands of years. So it's really an important subject, but it's advancing so rapidly that I'm trying to sort of run to keep up here.
I also want to bring up really quickly to your wonderful website, globalpeaceprayer.com.
Thank you very much. Yes. If anyone has been following what's been going on in Lebanon and in the Middle East lately, and of course, this is a continuing concern to everyone. It's been going on for years now. You know, we're at a very crucial time when the planet has taken a lot of hits environmentally, and it needs our prayers to sustain it and to heal. And at the same time, to bring peace, to help try to quiet some of the anger and the fears that are the present in the world, because these wars are so destructive. So, globalpeaceprayer.com encourages people to pray in a certain way that may have the maximum effectiveness to heal.
Well, thank you so much, Claude. We are going to have to close our transmission of Toward the Light for this week, but it has been a joy and an honor to have you with us. And on that note, and remember, Indeed, keep your prayer caps on wherever you are, and do remember that only love prevails. Thank you and blessings. We will talk to you next week.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.